and welcome to Talking Flutes Extra. My name is Jean-Paul Wright, and today I'm joined by Los Angeles-based flute player Gina Luciani. Hi, Gina.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going very well. What's the weather like?
It's nice and sunny outside.
What a silly question,
isn't
it?
Standard here in LA.
And surprise, yeah. Surprise, it's sunny here in London.
Oh, good. That's awesome.
Makes a change, because everybody thinks of London as being very wet and windy and dour. But, you know, occasionally we do see the sun.
Oh, good. Yay.
Right. For those of you listening who don't know Gina, I could wax lyrical about all the things Gina's done in her very short career. However, I would strongly recommend you visit ginaluciani.com, her website, where she has everything, all the resources, such as the videos that she does on YouTube, to Instagram links, to Facebook links, and also details of all the orchestral projects she's done, such as Planet Earth, Netflix Chef's Table, and working with video games, League of Legends and Halo Wars 2. The story goes on and on and on. And so I will put that away and I'll let people find their own stuff, Gina. Right, what I'd like to do for this Talking Flutes Extra podcast is to take you back. How did the story begin with Gina and music?
Well, I started music when I was 4.5 years old. So I was really young. A lot of flute players don't start until they're a little older. But what happened is, you know, my parents aren't really musicians. My dad can't play anything. And then my mom played a little bit of music in high school, primarily clarinet. And she also did a little bit of piano. And so when I was little, she had just a cheap keyboard. It wasn't even weighted or anything like that. So she was going to a music store to get some sheet music, and I was with her, and I saw those miniature violins that they have for kids. So I said, oh, I want to play that. And so she was a little terrified because she knew nothing about how to start a kid on violin. She never played violin, anything like that. And she didn't even know at that time if you could even start a kid that's 4 years old on an instrument. So she started looking into it and found the Suzuki method and was looking into teachers. Ultimately, then what happened was that my favorite movie at the time was The Little Mermaid. And a lot of people probably don't remember this part of the movie, but I do, because I watched it so many times I destroyed the VHS. But there's a part where the prince plays the flute. It's like a fife or something, but my mom at the time just told me it was a flute, so I said I wanted to play that. And so she was really excited about that because she actually had an old flute in the basement somewhere. So we grabbed that out and we added a curved head joint to it and I got started. So yeah, that's how I started when I was 4.5.
4.5. And for the listeners, there are photographs up online to prove that point. They're really sweet.
My clothing is hilarious, so it's kind of embarrassing, but it's kind of fun too.
But that's one thing we don't do, Gina. We don't look at pictures of ourselves many years back and look at the clothes we were wearing.
That's true.
When you get to my age, you do not go back. So along the way, as a flute player or in a musician, you must have had some very influential teachers. Now, all of them important in their own different ways, but can you tell me about some of them and why they were so important to you?
Right. I didn't have a lot of teachers actually growing up. Total, I had about 4 teachers.
Okay.
So I started with this woman that lived pretty close to where we were living that did the Suzuki method, and her name was Cindy Henderson, and she was fantastic. She was so great with kids, and I really attribute my love of music and really being into it at a young age to her. And then when I was about 7 years old, we ended up moving a couple hours south, so I had to find a new teacher. And I was extremely lucky because Laurel Ann Maurer was living about 40 minutes away, so I started studying with her. And she was just really, really fantastic and so attentive to detail and also just very encouraging. And there were definitely lessons I went into that I hadn't practiced. You know, I took private lessons from the time I was 4 until I went to college, so you know, those teenage years or whatever, that I just didn't feel like practicing. And she always found something positive to say. So that was a really great thing. So then my senior year of high school, she ended up moving to Vermont, which was kind of scary timing, right? Because this is when I was going to audition for schools, for conservatories. And I was very lucky because Dr. April Clayton, that teaches at BYU in Utah, she let me go and study with her, which I don't know if she takes a lot of high school students. So I was just like really thrilled to have her, and she was just great. And also just being able to transition to her so quickly, and especially at such a crucial time in my career, auditioning for schools was really important. So I was very lucky to find all those teachers in Utah. You know, Utah's like a pretty big state, but there's not a lot of people. So the fact that there were so many quality teachers there was just remarkable. So then afterwards, then I went and studied with Jim Walker at Colburn Conservatory of Music and then USC. For people who don't know USC, what that stands for, there's actually two USCs in the United States, but the one I went to was University of Southern California. So I went and studied with him there for my master's. So total, I studied with him for 6 years.
So when you talk about encouragement from your teachers, the teachers that said positive things but encouraging things. Now, we all know as teachers, as players, we can say positive things, but it doesn't really open up anything within inside the individual. What
right.
do you think that they said to you that actually opened up that possibility to you at that moment?
Right. Well, she would, I guess I should clarify, she would always start on a positive note.
Hello,
she would
Gina.
Always, I mean, she was really good about, you know, just being constructive criticism rather than it being... I guess mean criticism, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But she would always, like, I would play a piece and then she would find something good to say. So,
yeah.
Oh, your tone sounds really great. Or I really liked that you were using your dynamics that way. Or something along those lines, so that she at least started with a positive note. No, she didn't always just say, I don't think it's very helpful to a student if your teacher is just always saying, oh, you're wonderful, you're amazing, that was great. You know, that's not going to ultimately help you. And especially with a teacher, you need somebody to be completely, brutally honest with you to tell you what you need to work on. So, yeah, she started with positive, something positive.
That's so important. And as you say, mm-hmm. the constructive criticism, which leads you along the line of your performance to almost an edge, and then they just pull you back a little bit. So they allow you to sort of play to your full potential, but pull
exactly.
you back and pick you up on things. So it's very important that students and teachers today know how to actually teach positively, but critically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think it's great for the students too, because so many times I hear people, not necessarily musicians, because I think a lot of people are used to that, but people in other industries that they say, oh my gosh, I can't believe my boss told me that I was doing this wrong. I'm like, but isn't that what a boss is supposed to do, is to tell you? I mean, I understand if they were being mean about it or, you know, something like that, but that's what you should be able to do. I ultimately want the work to be as good as it can be, and having constructive criticism is going to make that happen. So I think that's something that everyone can learn from musicians.
Well, that naturally brings me to the next question, which is an orchestral question, which is, if you're playing a part in an orchestra mm-hmm. and the conductor doesn't like what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
do you obviously get nasty conductors that say it as it is, and you get nice conductors?
Right, you definitely get both, yeah. ultimately, with conductors, whether I agree with them or not, their vision is going to be shown to the audience. So you might not always agree with that, but I always try to do my very best. If they ask me to do something, whether it's play louder, softer, do a different phrasing, or whatever, I just try to do whatever they want to do and make it the best I can.
So you spend a lot of your time playing in orchestras, in mm-hmm. recording studios for some of the big Hollywood TV and movie soundtracks.
Right.
One thing I'd
mm-hmm.
like to know is, can you turn up in jeans and t-shirt and play? Because when you think about sitting in an orchestra, it's all posh frocks and bow tie. And secondly, what is it like playing for film and TV and even gaming music?
Right. Well, the dress code, there's not really a dress code. If it's a smaller project, yeah, a lot of times I am wearing jeans and a t-shirt. And I always try to make sure, though, I look nicer, you know, like a nice solid black t-shirt or something like that and nice shoes. I'm not wearing flip-flops to work.
Sure.
And when it's a bigger session, typically, yeah, I try to dress up a little bit more. I'll still probably wear jeans, but maybe with like a dress shirt or a blazer or something like that. But there's no clear dress code for those.
No, and when you're sat there and the red light goes on, can you see the film in front of you when the conductor is conducting?
Yeah, sometimes they'll have it, sometimes they don't, for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes they can't show it to you because they don't want anybody to give out spoilers. Sometimes they just don't set it up, or that's not their priority at the time. But sometimes they do have it up as well, which I have to say can be really distracting, especially if it's in front of you. When I did Planet Earth 2, when we were recording that, they did have it out, and there was this part, I think it was like a fox was jumping or something. It was really funny, and there was definitely one moment that I was terrified because I had lost where I was in my rest, and I was distracted by the fox. So it can be sometimes hard watching whatever they have out, so I usually try to only watch it maybe once I'm done with the cue, like all the music that I have, and then I'll watch at that point.
And video games, Gina, when they record video games, you just recording short passages and long passages with the orchestra that they then gel and sew together within the video game, or
yeah, that's exactly how they do it.
So it's very yeah, patterned. It's sort of very mathematically based.
Yeah, they just have a bunch of different cues, and then, yeah, I'm not entirely sure how they put it all together, but it's pretty remarkable when you have an actual orchestra recording video game music, and then you get to actually hear it in the video game. It's pretty crazy the way that they're able to engineer that.
And it's obviously some of the most popular music in the world, and most recognized music in the world is from video games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different music business that we're in and we're transitioning further into. And on that subject, the internet has changed many things for musicians. So how has it impacted on you as a musician and what you do in general in your daily life?
Right. Well, it's helped me in so many different ways, and it's, you know, shaped my career in so many ways. Obviously, social media, and also I'm doing Skype lessons with people all over the world, which is pretty awesome. The one thing that I think is so remarkable about that is that you can have a lesson with anyone, anywhere in the world, which before, you know, there were some people I wanted to study with, but they were in another country or across the US or something like that, and I wasn't able to get to them. And now you could just call them up for a Skype lesson, and you can sit at your house, you know, and have a lesson, which I think is really amazing. Obviously, it's not quite the same as having an in-person lesson, but to not be able to, you know, you have either you don't get to have a lesson with them or you can have one via Skype, I think that's a really awesome alternative. And then also, I started doing remote recordings. A lot of people don't know what that is, so I'll just explain to you what that is. I know you know, but not a lot of people know. A lot of times, people all over the world, they need any instrument, you know, flute, clarinet, whatever it is. So what they do sometimes, if they want a particular player or they don't have any players that they know in their area, they will have someone record it remotely. So I have a setup, a whole recording setup in my house. So I will have composers send me projects. So sometimes they'll send me the actual Pro Tools session or just the WAV files, and they send it all over. I record it here, I send it back to them, and then it's in their project. I've been able to record for people from India, from all over Europe, from Canada, just all over the place. And it's been really great to be able to connect with all these people. Again, all over the world, it's great how the internet has allowed that. Also, it's kind of funny, I do remote sessions for people in LA, which you're like, why is that? You live there. But they, a lot of times, will have crazy deadlines. And I've literally had composers ask me, can you get this to me today? So that has happened. And as long as I'm free, of course, I get it done for them. And so it's helpful, I think, for them, because then they're able to not worry about actually engineering the session or getting a recording space. I just, you know, they send me whatever they want me to record. I record it and send it back to them.
Can you ever see the day when they'll be doing this virtually for a whole orchestra rather than just...
Oh, they are. Yes,
wow.
They are. Yeah, they do that a lot, actually. Mm-hmm.
So they send it to a bunch of violin players and then you'll just layer it up?
No, they record an entire orchestra. They'll have an entire session going in another country and then they Skype in.
Oh, crikey.
Isn't that insane?
It is.
Yeah.
Is it for cost reasons, or is it to enable the right person to be integrated with an orchestra and a piece that's not necessarily there?
Well, a lot of times, if somebody is in LA and they're outsourcing it, it's typically cost reasons. But there are times that people will Skype into LA because they want LA session players playing on their projects. So that happens as well.
So social media, can we just nip back? You sort of dodged that question, but you're actually very popular on social media, Gina. What channels do you utilize and how does this enable you to interact?
Yeah, I started on Instagram primarily, like as a public profile rather. Of course I had Facebook and back in the day MySpace. But my first like public profile was Instagram. So I started on there and it was more of the reason that I was doing it is just as a freelancer, there are, you know, months or like a month at a time or a week at a time that are just kind of slow. Work usually, you know, you're really busy or work is really slow. So I was having a slow period and I was getting frustrated because I like to be in control of my career and what creative work that I'm doing. And so I just decided, well, I'm going to do something about that. So what I ended up doing was I just said, okay, I'm going to start an Instagram. So I started taking pictures and videos. And it was great because it gave me something to work towards, at least with videos, in terms of, oh, okay, I should practice this today or whatever. And it was just more of a means of me putting something creative out into the world every day. And it just kind of morphed into this thing. And I just never expected it to go the way that it did. And it's just great because now I'm able to connect with a lot of young players. I think that's the thing that I love the most, is just that a lot of them ask me questions or career advice, or they're down about something. And, you know, I just want to be able to help out as much as I can. And it's great that I can actually do that, that I have this platform that I'm able to do that. So yeah, I did Instagram. I ended up going to Facebook and YouTube, and been building those up more in the past year. YouTube started about a year ago that I started putting out videos more regularly, and then Facebook in the summer.
And I would say I quite like the way your Instagram profile is going, because a flute is a flute is a flute. And all of us that post on Instagram, I think there's only so many configurations you can have a flute, sat on music, and in my case with a coffee cup. And you're deviating out to more of a lifestyle, and to show people and young flute players that there is a life beyond social media and that they should embrace everything. And you're sort of dragging your profile that way, which I think is very interesting.
Right. Well, the thing is, obviously, yes, I'm a musician, but I think a lot of people forget that there's a person behind the musician. And it's important for musicians to have something that they do outside of music as well. So I'm trying to give people kind of a glimpse of my actual life outside of music.
Yeah, and I think that's important. And I think one question I'd like to ask is, do you have down days? Do you have low days?
That I'm not working?
Well, you live in California. It's sunny. You know I love California. But you live in California. It's sunny. You play the flute. You're very popular on social media. You know, are you like the rest of us? Do you sometimes wake up and go,
Bleh. Of course. Yes. I mean, you know, there's obviously those days you wake up and your sound is just like, where did it go? Like, my flute sound sounds terrible. That happens. And then just there's days that, even though I'm really happy with how my career is going and I've been having a lot of great opportunities, sometimes I just get really down. I'm like, oh, I wish I had work right now for, you know, maybe that week I don't have a lot of work or whatever. And it happens to everybody. I think the thing, though, that is so important, a lot of people get really down because they compare themselves to others. And obviously, that's really hard not to do.
Absolutely.
But ultimately, you're your own person. And everybody's going to have a different journey and a different career. And I just would highly recommend, as much as you can, not to compare yourself to others. Compare yourself to yourself and set goals for yourself and try to actually meet those goals. It'll make you so much more happy to just concentrate on yourself and not what other people are doing.
And I would endorse that 100%. Try and find out who you are. As you say, Don't try and mirror or look at what somebody else is doing and then worry that you're not, because you're not doing it, you're any lesser of a person or as a musician. So as an established musician yourself, what would you recommend young players do to try or an attempt to harness their potential, much of which they won't actually know exists within them? So what would you recommend they do?
To harness their potential. Well, so this is the thing, is everybody can come up with brilliant ideas, but a lot of people don't actually pursue those ideas. So I think one of the biggest things that has helped me with my career is just that I would come up with goals or say, like, I want to do this or that, and I just find a way to make it happen. I've talked to so many people, not even just in the music industry, but in other industries, that they say, oh, I would love to do this. And I say, well, okay, well, why don't you do that then? Oh, I don't know where to start. Well, none of us typically know where to start. I think it's just important. Go into your research. Go take an online class if you need to about whatever it is. Figure it out. For instance, like when I was in my undergrad, I wanted to have a website for whatever reason. I just thought, oh, it would be nice to have a website that basically was a demo of what I do. And so I made a website. I had done some coding back in high school, but I was pretty rusty and I just figured it out. A lot of people asked, how did you do that? And I said, well, I figured it out. I just looked it up and figured out how to do it. And also when I was in junior high, that's when I decided I wanted to play in the studios here in LA. And I just, that was my goal. And so I moved out here and I made it happen. I didn't know anyone in LA when I moved here, and I was coming from Utah, which is just obviously completely different than LA. It was so much smaller and everything, and, you know, moving to the big city here was really daunting and scary. I had never gone to an all-music school like Colburn, so that was a big shock for me as well. And so I just went through it and figured out how to make my dreams a reality.
So to encapsulate, really, it's the fear of failure that holds people back from making that first step, doesn't it?
Yeah,
fear of 100%. Making a mistake. And if you can just not worry about making a mistake, I suppose it's the same as in music, really. As soon as you start worrying that there's a hard bit coming up, the chances are your focus is on the hard bit and you're probably going to go wrong. Whereas 100%. If your focus was beyond the hard bit, chances are you wouldn't go wrong. So in life, if you're scared of making a mistake, then you will never achieve your true potential, would you?
Well, you can't even make a mistake if you're scared of making a mistake, like if you never do the thing.
No, and you don't grow, do you, unless you make mistakes.
No.
That's part of life.
And I think it's good to make mistakes, and it's also good to have failures. Like, you don't know if you like something or not until you actually try it. So if you're just worried it's not going to be successful, you'll never know if that was actually right for you or not.
Well, I would totally agree, but I'm still on the flute 40-odd years later, and when I always wanted to play the French horn. So, you know, it's...
You know what, John Paul? You need to start French horn.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now you've said that, yes. that's going to be interesting. I must try something else. Fly fishing or...
Yeah, exactly.
Or marathon running or something. So, Gina, what projects are you working on at the moment?
Well, right now, I'm working on a lot of arrangements for upcoming videos. That's just kind of an ongoing project for me. I feel like I'm doing those every day.
These videos, by the way, you have to catch them. They're only on YouTube, but you can find excerpts on Instagram and obviously Facebook. But they are so professionally recorded, and they're fun.
Oh, thank you.
And I love them.
Thank you. Yeah, they're so much fun. And it's just a great way also to bridge the gap between classical musicians and just music lovers. So that was also one thing that I was trying to do with those. A lot of people, I don't know, they think classical music, if you play anything but classical music, then it's not as good of music, I guess. But there's just so much great music out there, and it doesn't have to be just classical. So I just wanted to bring these different scores that people liked out there. And some of them are obviously really popular ones, like Beauty and the Beast. But then I also have some more obscure ones that I wanted to bring more attention to. Other projects, though, that I'm working on right now, I've talked to you a little bit about this, but I'm going to be launching a company, like a brand, mm-hmm. and primarily like lifestyle and apparel company. Yeah. So that's going to be happening hopefully in the next couple months here.
Lovely.
So I'm very excited about that.
And that's for all musicians, not just Flutie Tooties.
No, well, it's music lovers. It's not even just musicians. Yeah, it's just anyone who likes music.
So the entrepreneur that is Gina, the musician that is Gina, the person that is Gina, so how does Gina unwind? In fact, how do you unwind at all, apart from having a glass of wine occasionally?
Oh, yes, wine is definitely, I love wine, red wine in particular. But let's see, I love going on walks and just clearing my head, or going to the beach is always a lot of fun. Also, really good food. Going out and having an amazing dinner is awesome. But I feel like it's really important to actually set times to unwind, because for a long time there, work was just getting so crazy, and I wasn't taking any time to actually have for myself. I was just working the whole time, and I wasn't being as productive as I could, or doing my best work. So I think it's really important to actually take that time, or say, today I am not touching my instrument or doing any work at all. You know, obviously you don't want to do that super often, but I think that is important.
So I would totally endorse that it's very important to find time for you. To conclude, Gina, thank you for taking your time out of your busy Los Angeles schedule. How do listeners find out more about you? And I've already mentioned the website, but there's also, you've got a CD, and I love that CD, by the way, and your YouTube and Instagram account. How do they find out more about you?
You can go to my Instagram or Facebook or YouTube. You can just search my name, Gina Lucioni, and you'll be able to find everything about me. You'll be able to find me, I think. Yeah, and go to my website. Yeah, I would love to connect with everybody.
And the links will be beneath this video in the posting on iTunes and obviously on Podbean. Gina, thank you very much for your time. I look forward to seeing you at the NFA in a few months' time.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having me on this.
Again, have a great day. Of course, you're in California. You're going to, aren't you?
I hope so. It's supposed to rain tomorrow, so I'm going to enjoy the sun today.
Thank you, Gina.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And now it's time for Joke of the Week.
Hello.
Hello, London. Do you have a clean joke for me?
Yeah, I've got mine here for all you Flutie Tootie types, yeah.
Go on, then.
What's the definition of optimism?
Oh, I don't know. What is the definition of optimism?
Strange things. Right,
ladies. Oh, dear. Gina, I'm really going to miss not speaking to Graham for a while, but I'll be back again soon. So, back to the correspondence from last week, and it appears that I've really opened a can of worms here. I said that Americans say flutist, and us Brits say flute player. However, I've been reminded of flautist. How remiss of me, and big apologies to Adam Hunt in Edinburgh, who pointed that one out. Tracy Jenkins-Smith from Cincinnati has also pointed out some other apparent glaring omissions. The Brits say trainers, and we say sneakers in the US. Yeah, that's right. Brits say get in the queue, and we say it's a line. And the US, we say drugstore or pharmacy, and you weird guys say chemist. So, let's now call it a truce. Lucky for you, this is the final TF Extra for a while, as Claire will be back with Talking Flute Series 2 starting next week on Monday the 7th of May, where she has dedicated her podcast to positive mental attitude, the key to success. So that's going to be a fab and interesting pod to listen to. Before I'd go, I'd just like to say it's been a pleasure to be with you these last few weeks. And whilst I hand you back to the wonderful Claire for the real Talking Flute pods, I'll be back to filling in the gaps with these in-betweeny TF Extra podcasts starting Monday the 11th of June. Thanks for joining me today, and I wish you a wonderful week ahead. Goodbye. Talking Flutes and TF Extra are flute podcast productions by Trevor James Flutes. For more information, visit trevorjamesflutes.com.